Jay, did you comb your hair this morning?
No, it's still uncombed. I haven't combed my hair since working on Little House in the Prairie, to be honest.
82, 81?
1981, I think it was. This has been,
and I'm wearing a hat because you told me that my hair was bad, and I got a haircut, and I didn't want to show you what it was.
I didn't
yet.
Say it was bad. I said it was under product.
Oh,
product
okay, very
did.
Good. Well, you know what's not bad?
What?
Next episode of Smart Less Hair comes.
Smart.
Are you feeling better today, Jason?
Look at him.
Not really.
Oh.
The doctor figured, you know, since I had COVID.
Sure.
And then, so the immunity system, whatever.
You're still seeing Dr. Figured?
Yeah. She figured that my system's all run down. And so that's why I got the head cold from Maple right afterwards. Man. And why I can't lick it.
She must have gone to, sounds like she went to a hell of a med school to put that together. You know?
Yeah. Man. Yet she can't give me anything to fix it.
What about, wow, but maybe it's because you finally calmed down for a sec. Like, you were so busy and now it's like, whew,
yeah,
right?
That could be it. And I do like to do nothing, so.
Yeah. It suits you.
Yeah.
You'll feel better tomorrow. You feel a little better today, yeah?
You sound like shit.
Yeah, how do I shouldn't be doing
but you
this
look
record,
great. You
right?
always look great. No, you look great. Yeah. I mean, thank God you had all that surgery, right? All that surgery covers up. You did all that face work.
Yeah, this is a great time
it's
for
really
me to be
settled.
Healing.
Your face is really settled, dude. I wanted to say that the other day.
Do I still look surprised?
Yeah.
I think I had them, I stitched the eyebrows up too high.
What do you take, Jade, what do you take when you feel like that? Yesterday you took Theraflu. I used to take that all the time and then they discontinued it.
No, I got a black market.
Oh, you did?
I do. I take one of those Sudafeds with all, everybody's like, well, this got all the heavy duty shit. I'm like, yeah, I want the fucking thing that gets me all, yeah.
Yeah, you have to ask for it behind the thing, right?
They got to fucking unlock it. Are you sure you want? I'm like, look, I'm not making meth in my bathtub, man. I'm just trying to get through today.
Right.
But does it knock you out and make you all sleep? I guess that's not
No, it gets
sleepy.
You all, Speed. Jazzed up and then you crash and you feel like shit.
I don't know, man.
But you kind of get through the day.
But it's like, it's like a shot of prednisone or something.
What'd you guys do last night?
Last night we went and put the lights up on a tree at our friend's house. With
just
the
a
kids.
Very random tree?
Just a random, I go around the neighborhoods and...
Hey, have you ever, you know what I said to Maple the other day? She said, you know, you hear all these Christmas, because I always have the Christmas music on in the car from Thanksgiving forward. It's all
I love
day,
that.
Every day.
I love that.
And she's like, what about, where do they do Christmas caroling in the world? And I said, well, just in everyone's neighborhood. I said, you should do that with your friends. You should just start walking around some neighborhood and you just stop on the sidewalk in front of someone's house and you just start singing and the people inside kind of hear it and they come to the door or the window and they look and they're charmed and they're warmed and it's that spirit. And she's like, oh, I'm going to do that. So I think she's going to do that next year. It's too late now to learn the songs and everything.
What do you mean, learn the songs?
They can read them off the book. They can,
she knows we wish you a Merry Christmas, all that kind of stuff.
Remember, Sean, you used to do that at your house. You used to sit behind the piano. Like,
fucking JB, I would love to see your face if a bunch of people came singing out your door. You'd be like, get the hell out of here.
What the fuck? I'd get out my BB gun.
Yeah.
I'm trying to watch Jen Psaki right now. You're interrupting Rachel Maddow.
I paused MSNBC for this bullshit.
What's going on?
I tell you who can sing.
Look at the segue.
I tell you who can make a lot of music that people would give anything to see them outside their door, including me. I would give almost anything.
Do they make beautiful music?
Our guests today are two musicians who helped. They really changed the direction of music, in my view, and a lot. I'm not alone in that. One is a songwriter whose work showed that songs could be everything from melodic to abrasive to emotionally direct, and the other is a guitarist whose approaches can be only described as textured and full of tension and restraint.
Never heard you say textured.
I know. Yeah, I'm so excited. I'm buzzing a little bit. Yeah. I'm just together. These guys, they created a band whose influence could be heard across decades of music, shaping and influencing artists from Nirvana to Radiohead.
Jason just
to every sort of, I think everybody who came after them was had to be influenced by them. Certainly, they've just their music has just been their sort of their legend has grown since the moment they started making music. Please welcome Charles Thompson, also known as Black Francis, and Joey Santiago. They are Pixies.
Oh wow. Jesus Christ! Well, what have you done,
you guys?
Good morning, Ben.
Wow,
this, everybody else,
dude.
Oh, Willie,
guys.
Will, are your pants even on?
This is. I hope that's okay. They weren't supposed to know, man.
Heck, Will sitting on plastic. This is, gentlemen, Joey, I heard you
sipping your coffee or tea or whatever you've got. Oh, both of you. Charles, you got one going too.
It's fresh.
Where are we, first of all, where are we finding you guys today? Let's just start there, where we are now.
I'm in Los Angeles.
Beautiful.
Hey, Joe. Did you get home okay?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow. Tell us what happened.
I mean, because I'm not in Los Angeles. I'm in Northampton, Massachusetts. But I feel like I just got home, last night, but really, I guess we ended a couple weeks ago, but it took me a couple weeks to get home. And
you walked.
So now, Joey, yeah. I just haven't talked to him since the last time we were.
Wait, you guys haven't talked since you were doing a show or something? Were you guys on tour?
Exactly. Yeah. Like we were in Honolulu. We were like, all right, see you later. All right, see you.
Honolulu. Well done.
And so I was like, oh, hey, Joe, where are you? Did you go home? I went home. I mean, it took me 2 weeks to get here. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, I like this.
Offshoot conversation already here. Sorry.
No, Charles, you have to know that you heard us catching up. This is where we catch up with each other
yeah,
too.
Exactly. Yeah. So, do your housekeeping right now. We'll wait. Yeah.
Let's get into some admin. Joe, how did you got home okay?
Yeah, thank God. Yeah. I mean, nonstop. If I would have stopped, it would have been the Pacific Ocean. Somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
What about it's an 11-hour flight over there to Massachusetts though, right? That's a big trip.
With a bunch of other big trips, though, that were right behind it. So it was sort of, I did binge watch. I'm getting very cranky with the media available. I like it when I have to download a bunch of YouTube videos to get me through those, 12-hour flights and stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel terrible. I wish I had more patience for the films or television programs, but I get all, I don't want to watch this. And then I change it. I don't want to watch this. And then I...
Yeah. What'd you binge watch? What'd you get through?
I have so many options. You know, I remember, do you remember People's Express Airlines?
Sure.
Yeah.
And you could, I think it was $149. Mm. And you paid, didn't you pay when you got on the plane?
Yeah.
You paid some guy who came down the aisle. And I remember paying in cash.
Yeah, for snacks.
To fly to LA.
Movies.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
you could bring a lunch. Everyone brought back a brown bag to lunch.
It was an economical way to fly. I remember because I grew up in Toronto and they used to do, you could go to New York. So we'd take a bus to Buffalo Airport and then you could pay and it was $100 to fly to New York from Buffalo.
And there's an airline out there that's proposing you could stand up.
And apparently on this airline, you can roll the windows down, too.
Roll the windows.
You can. That's what they said. They fly at a real low altitude, roll the windows down, relax.
You know what I was amazed by? I just learned a year ago, you know, when you look at the stats when you're flying, that it's 70 below zero up there.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Sean.
Outside. I didn't know it was that cold outside.
It's really cold when you get up there.
Have you ever seen
videos of people climbing mountains before?
Yeah, but it's not 70
below. They're not in Hawaiian shirts most of the time. I don't know if you noticed that. They're not in Speedos when they're going up Everest, dude.
This would have been a good question for us to ask. What was that scientist we had on that I marveled? I really impressed him with my skills, my questions and stuff.
Neil deGrasse?
Would have been a good question for him. Since we're closer to the sun... Why is it
Listen, we got Pixies on. We're wasting time. We're talking about... Guys,
this is really cool.
Gentlemen, this is really, really cool. So, you guys, I love when great things start from basically chance encounters, if you will. You guys were lived next door to each other. Is that true?
There's this... Well, what's the name of that that dormitory, Joe? That's
Sylvan.
Sylvan. Sylvan at UMass Amherst. There's like three buildings called Sylvan or whatever. So, I guess they're all Sylvan. Anyway, what do they call those, Joe? They're
suites, right?
They're you have like seven roommates. You know, it's like a suite. You know, and you share. It's kind of like a little. They're like it's like a cinder block building. It's literally like a. I shouldn't say it's like a prison because I've never been to prison, but it's like kind of like a prison, you know, like without bars, but it's like, you know, really, you know, rudimentary kind of, there's like a living room and then there's like a, there's like three or four bedrooms and then there's a bathroom shower area. And there's about seven of us in a suite, you know, and so we were in the same suite. At our freshman year.
You just freaked Jason out because he's thinking about the communal shower already. I saw his arms go up. Jason, you're gone.
I'm just not going to shower until junior year when I have my own apartment.
This is at UMass Amherst.
Yeah.
And this is, what year is this, like 84, am I going to say, or is it earlier?
Something like that,
83.
83, 84. Wow. You guys are sharing this cinder block suite, as Charles, you made it sound so beautiful. And so you guys are in there. And what happens? Who goes, hey, do you want to start a band? Like, I just love this.
Charles was playing. You had your acoustic guitar already, and you were playing a
lot.
I
had some annoying songs that I would like kind of play around the dormitory on a regular basis. And Joey was kind enough to kind of... sit in and kind of plunk along. He got his guitar out. And, you know, neither one of us were like what you call, you know, guitar weenies or whatever, you know, where we were like hanging out, playing the guitar all the time. We weren't that, we appreciate the art form, but we weren't like, you know, we weren't beholden to it or anything.
Were you
like
looking
that.
For we, people to listen? Did you care?
I don't know. I think we were pretty like, we didn't know what we wanted. I think that, like, I remember I worked at the university campus store, and you know they had the radio on. You know, you win tickets tonight. You know, and I remember it was James Taylor, I think it was, and nothing against James Taylor, but you know, at that time, that wasn't necessarily at the top of my list. But call now. I called from the back room, and they gave me a pair of tickets. Joe, do you want to go see James Taylor tonight? Okay. You know, it was all kind of like, nothing to do. It was like, okay, let's do that. And like, even when we started being a band, dealing with like record company types, they would make a suggestion and we would say like, okay, you know, because we didn't really know how anything worked. And so it was all good. It was like, it was action. It was something that was going to happen, you know? So anyway, I kind of lost my point there.
No, you're right on point. And I was going to say, so you guys, you're there, you're kind of, you're playing, for lack of a better term, jamming, as dumb as that sounds.
Well, yeah.
But you are, and thank you, Jason. So that you guys, you're making stuff, and then you guys, I'm going to kind of jump a little bit. You make what's known as the Purple Tapes, right? It was sort of like, it was kind of like a demo, but not really, if I'm kind of right. It was like the first time you recorded. My question is, what was the first time that you guys said, all right, we're kind of making let's write a song, or did you kind of just by mistake write a song, or did you go out to make these songs? Like, how did that happen? I love the idea of like, we're kind of aligned and I got
We got separated a little bit because he was back in Amherst, and then I went to San Juan, Puerto Rico I was supposed to go for the year, but about halfway through, I hadn't even gone to a class. And I wrote him a letter. Like, do you remember, like, we used to write letters? Like, I forgot that we used to write letters, but I think I wrote Joe a letter saying, let's meet in Boston and we'll start the band finally. And he wrote back and said, okay, we'll see you in January. You know what I mean?
Like, by the way, Charles, I found
up.
The
like,
letter.
We didn't have phones or anything.
Wait, Joe, what happened?
I found the letter.
No way.
Oh, recently
you
found the letter?
Yeah, my wife wanted to go, or my girlfriend, but newly married, but she wanted to go over my trunk at my at the house that I grew up in. I mean, there's nothing in there. And then we went in, and it's like, fuck, the letter's in here.
That's fucking rad.
That's cool.
And so Joe, you get this letter from Charles, and you're like, what? It kind of gets, you're like, okay, cool. Like, you start thinking about this.
It was goading me to drop out.
Yeah. Well, what were you guys studying in school? Like was there a path that you guys had to kind of derail to pursue the band?
I was undeclared until the last moment.
Yeah.
There was this a spoof on April 1st that the people, the undeclared, were going to go to some war in Grenada or something. And I go, oh, I remember shit, that. I got to find a fucking major.
Or you're going to have to serve in Grenada.
Yeah, so I just picked economics just to get out of the war.
Uh-huh.
But it was a spoof, you know.
What about you, Charles?
I was trying to remember what happened when they did that spoof. That's the same thing. They caused us to think about the bigger questions because it was the college newspaper there, right? And UMass called the Collegiate, whatever the fuck it was called. But it was, and it was an April Fool's, and then it was like, yeah, it's going to be a draft. Fuck. You believe it for that. Like a good,
I love that
like
the paper knew
half,
how dumb and pliable the student body was.
yeah, man. But yeah, I was like thinking about Canada and stuff, and
we would have welcomed you.
Like, just right. I mean, I didn't care about like having to quit school. I think we were both like looking for like reasons to drop out of school because school was like it was okay, but. I don't know. It didn't kind of ring the bell quite.
But clearly you guys weren't novices at playing music, right? At this point, you guys were you kind of knew what you were doing.
No, a little bit.
You knew some chords. How about that?
Yeah. I mean that in the best possible way. I don't mean that it was bad that we didn't know what we were doing, but it wasn't like we were like, shit, we've been like slaving away in the, you know, down in the basement, you know, for so many months now or so many years or no, it was none of that. It was just like a little rinky dink, dink, dink once in a while. Then let's drop out of school, start a band, see if that happens.
It's amazing.
And then I'll meet you in Boston. And we met there and he had an apartment on one side of the park. You were over there by Berklee School of Music, Joe. Remember you had that brown apartment, you had that epiphany where everything was brown in your life? You know? We'll just come back to the
Charles,
brown epiphany.
Charles, why am I so depressed? And you go in my fucking place, it's all brown. It's like, this could be the reason right here. Everything's brown.
So you guys come back to, and then first
And
of
I
all,
feel guilty because Joey, like today, sometimes he'll don brown and he'll look nice, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'll say, shit, you know, Joey looks nice and he's wearing brown. And I gave him shit about everything being brown. And there was I was frowning on the brown, but there was nothing wrong with it. It was like he had it together.
Brown does get a very bad, rap. I don't think it's fair.
But anyway, he lived in this brown apartment and I lived in some other apartment like across the park. And we used to, we used to go to the, it was kind of naive, you know, we used to go to the club called the Ratskeller in Kenmore Square. Which is no longer there, but it's an old venue because I believe my parents used to hang out there when they were teenagers. We used to time how long the sets were for the bands because we had to figure out, well, how do we do that? You know, how do we get from just having a couple of rinky-dink tunes on our guitars here to having a full-fledged band where we're doing with those kids are doing.
Yeah.
And we used to hang out in clubs and time. Oh, we need 25 minutes or whatever. And we need to, who do we got to talk to? And it takes a while to figure out, you got to send a letter to that person. You got to send the bits to the sound man's girlfriend, Maria. She's the one you have to get the tape to. And, oh, okay, here's the tape. You know, there's this process of getting the tape to the right fucking person. And then finally getting the Monday night and then the Tuesday night. And then I suppose it's the same thing with comedy or anything, you know.
Was there a particular was there a particular night that you had at the club that that really caught on. You could feel the audience was like, "Oh, these guys are rad. Yeah. I'm gonna sign up to come see them wherever they play next." Did you know that you started to
have a following? Yeah, following was kind of developing.
Yeah,
I'll tell you when I knew we had something going.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember we were practicing at your apartment there in Fenway, and we heard a door knocking. The door knocked.
Yeah,
and go, "Shit, we're too loud." You know, they're gonna. It was the maintenance guy,
yeah.
And he, and we answered the door, and he goes, "Oh, I just wanted to tell you guys are sounding good."
Yeah,
that's fucking rad.
That's great.
Yeah.
And
this is a place right near Fenway.
Yeah. You live in the Fenway at the time.
In the Fenway, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where we had our first real rehearsal space was. Somewhere else, but we eventually ended up with a place with a sewer cap in it. And it was down in the basement, and there was a bunch of bands down there. And it was very expensive even then. You know, it was like fucking $500 a month for like a little windowless room with a sewer cap in it. And then when it rained, there were all these like bugs suddenly like flying in the space, and it smelled like shit. And yeah. It was just a god-awful place, but that's like the best that we could get.
Those are two opportunities where Jason would have quit the band with a shower and then the sewage space.
And the rehearsal space. And the
happy to produce. I'll see you guys at the mixing studio.
But wait a second. Were you guys...
you at the Hollywood Bowl.
When did you guys become Pixies? What was the moment you guys became? How'd the name come up and what was the moment? Like, okay, now we're Pixies.
Well, I suppose it would have been our second show officially, because the first show we were listed as the Puxies. And so officially we were the Puxies in our first engagement. And then the second
engagement,
they got the spelling right.
Typo.
The Pixies. But I suppose Joey picked the name of the band. He was saddled with that responsibility or took it upon himself. And... You had a dictionary, right, Joe?
Yeah.
I'm using a dictionary right now to hold up my computer. But I believe you were in the P's, and there were a lot of P names.
Did you just throw a dart?
It just looked good. You know, it had an X in the middle.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And,
that's really funny.
Also, what's the definition? Mischievous little elf. I love that.
Uh-huh.
So that's good. That's a good one.
That's what I start calling you, Willie.
Thanks,
okay,
man.
Yeah, you're my little pixie. Get over here. And we will be right back.
And now back to the show.
So you guys are playing and you're practicing and you were open. When you guys, sorry to go back to Purple Tapes, but that was kind of your first recording. You guys were you opening for other bands? Were you guys opening? Where did I read a long time? Were you opening for Throwing Muses or something? Is that right? Do I have any of that right?
Yeah, we did.
Sure, yeah. We used to open up for them.
Great band.
Because they were a little further along than we were with all of the showbiz, you know. So I think they had a record out and they had a manager and stuff. But we got hooked up with them and some of their people, you know, some of their crew and some of their manager. We had the same manager for a while, but the same producer for a little while. But I suppose that was, if there was any camaraderie, that would be the one band that was the if we had any camaraderie. There wasn't a lot of camaraderie in Boston for us. I don't mean in a negative way, even. I just mean that we didn't bother with that. It seemed very clear and apparent to us that we had to get out of Dodge in order for it to mean anything significant. We had to, because you know those bands that come through that are from other places. You know, you see them come through. There was this Australian band. What are they called? Celibate Rifles. I remember the Celibate Rifles used to come through and they would have draw 50 people or whatever every time they played at the Ratskeller. But it was like, wow, I don't know. They figured out how to get all the way here from Sydney or wherever they're from, and they're playing a show. And I don't know. It seems pretty fun to me. Like, so how do we get on that thing that they're doing, you know? And of course, you know, it's not that glamorous, but it doesn't have to be glamorous when you're, you know, 20 years old. It's like, you want to travel or meet people or whatever, you know?
I think that there's also that thing of like, maybe you're from where you're from the place and you want to kind of be, there's something mysterious about a band that's coming from somewhere else. Like you want to be from somewhere else. I don't know if that figures into it either, like to just sort of like add to the mystique. Is that part of it or am I reading that wrong?
Well, I suppose, but Joey and I both probably had this, we're the same exact age and we both have the same, he's originally from the Philippines and I'm originally from Massachusetts, but we both have the same kind of level of Beatle knowledge and sort of Beatle sort of brainwashing or whatever, you know what I mean? And other stuff from the 60s and 70s, but putting, just for the sake of conversation, putting Beatles at the front of that pack, you know? So by the time we met up when we were 17 or 18, it was like, oh, you like the Beatles? I like the Beatles. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like we have that if you love the Beatles, then you have some affection for that lore, right? For the Liverpool thing and the right. little club and yeah. when they went and played the strip clubs in Hamburg and blah, 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 the Star Club and all of the history and all of that. You know, even if you've never been there, mm-hmm. you have a lot of romantic feelings about those histories, you know? And mm-hmm. so when you finally get to go on tour and then you're there and you're playing in those clubs in those same cities, you're kind of like going, ah, this is what it was like. And this is what it's like to record at the BBC radio studios or whatever the experience is. Sometimes it matches right up with your heroes. It'll be the same building, you know what I mean? The mm-hmm. same stage or whatever. And so that's satisfying, you know, to be out on the map somewhere far from where you're from and be like, yep, but I'm doing the same thing that,
yeah.
you know, that the Fab Four did, you know, yeah. it's as corny as that, you know, but that's the way it is.
Was there a band that was really doing it when you guys got started that you kind of had your eye on and said, boy, if we could kind of go in that yeah. direction, we'd have something. That's where we want to go.
Well, they
that's,
were doing it and sort of tonally that you liked, that you were like, oh, this is kind of, was there any of that sort of influence wise
at that time?
I don't know, Joe. What did you think? I'm trying to think. Did we talk about that kind of stuff?
I like the Zulus. I remember the Zulus.
I don't know that.
They had yeah. something, you know, just wild guitar, wild yeah. vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I kind of want to jump to, so you guys are doing this stuff, and you put this stuff together, and you do, the Purple Tapes becomes basically Come On Pilgrim. Is that kind of, is that sort of right?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. and, but then your first real full-length record is Surfer Rosa. That's 1988. And that's kind of your introduction
yeah.
on a bigger scale to you guys, to the world. And it's meant with a ton of critical acclaim. Like this puts you guys front and center in what's going on. I'll tell you something, man. Knowing that you guys were coming on, I have three sons. My 15-year-old son is really into music, and we've been listening to you guys a lot the last couple of days, like in the car and stuff, and I keep going, oh, man, we're going to have these guys on the podcast. And I was playing some of your songs, and I'm like, yeah, this record came out in 1988. My son's like, no fucking way. Because it seems it seems so relevant musically. It seems so pressed. Everything about it just it seems so, for lack of a better word, modern or current or whatever. And you realize kind of how ahead of the curve you guys were in terms of just sonically, I think.
Yeah.
And I know that, and I'm sort of jumping all over the place, I know that since you guys, you put out five records in a really short period of time, and then you took a break for a number of years. And it was almost like after you guys, the first time you broke up, people went like, oh, we, oh, we missed that. We didn't realize at the time how great these dudes were, what these guys were doing.
Fuck you.
Yeah. Was there a sense of fuck you? Okay, fuck, let's hear it. Was there ever fuck you? Like, or we told you so, man. We were making, and when other bands started coming, because I know everybody, I mentioned in the intro, like Kurt Cobain, the guys in Radiohead, they've all talked about how much you guys influenced them. And when you kind of like, is there a little bit of like, yeah, we're trying to tell you that, man.
No. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we take it all that seriously, you know. It's, I mean, we take it seriously in the sense that we thoroughly enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Enjoy the whole routine, the whole, whatever it is you got to do. You know what I mean? You know, play a show or, you know, I don't really like doing TV shows, but, you know, like you got to do that sometimes. You know, go record a record and kind of, you know, you're in a friendly way competing with some other people maybe that are, I guess, contemporaries or whatever, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Plus competing with your heroes and everything, you know. So it's all really fun, but, you know, you can't take it too seriously. I don't know. I don't know, especially because I don't know if I – it's not like I feel like I went to – we went to music school for 20 years and slaved away for, you know, trying to just absorb all this stuff and worked so hard at it. I mean, we just love it and we like doing it and we're not, I don't know. So if other people like it, it's like, oh, good. You know, I like you too.
But Charles, you talk about like doing TV shows and stuff, and then I wanted to get in this, and this is all in no particular order because I'm just kind of vomiting my my obsession with you guys. I was thinking about how much, you know, the influence you guys have had. Well, first of all, I was thinking like in media, like if you think about Where Is My Mind, where you guys felt about Where Is My Mind being the last song, comes up a lot, I'm sure, so I'm sorry, forgive me, on, it, the, you know, it plays over the very end of Fight Club, when, and then the kind of the world is falling apart. And that was, I think, for a lot of like a new generation, like an introduction to you guys, everybody was like, holy shit. And when you see a song that you wrote, and I don't know, I'd like to know where your mind was when you wrote that compared to what it's been applied to, because now it's sort of represented in a different way, sort of the end of the world and stuff. What is that sort of that gap between where it was when it started and when you wrote it and what it ended up sort of symbolizing later because of its use in the movie?
I don't really know. I don't have a lot of memory of putting it together or feeling that it was...
important,
so notable or anything like that. But my girlfriend was usually, I played in the bathroom, you know, because it was the one private space in a, you know, in a little apartment, right? So, but she was in there doing makeup and said, and I saw, I was in the bedroom with my guitar playing those chords and kind of working out maybe an arrangement of the song, and she stopped what she was doing and said, finish that song. She said, that's a good one. And I went, okay. But that's the only memory I have of it,
that's
really.
Cool.
It just, I guess when I go back and I analyze it, it just sounds like a silly little folk song or something, you know, that you know, that I would have learned how to do stuff like that when I was when I was in about third or fourth grade. I used to hang out with a lot of hippie kind of folk music types in Newton, Massachusetts. And they schooled us in a lot of sing-along-y things that were kind of cool, actually, in retrospect, including Woody Guthrie and all that stuff, you know. But so to me, Where Is My Mind kind of just fits in with that, you know, here we go, in third verse, same as the first verse. Here we go, everybody. You know, yeah, it's not even a sensical song or anything. It's just like some delightful words to trip over, you know, while you're kind of skipping through a melody, and you know, it's.
I know. Well, that's really that. That's nice, but that's interesting because we all have. I mean, I have had so many experiences listening to that song myself in sort of deep moments and that sort of haunting that Joey, that guitar, you know, that whole like it just and it's had another life, as you probably know, like on social media and TikTok. Like my kids see it all the time that it's used in all these different ways. And it's, again, Charles, I mean, I know it's so funny to hear you that, like, yeah, you're just kind of coming up with it in a moment. And then it goes on to have this other application. It must be kind of trippy. Like, Jory, when you hear that guitar riff, it must come up sometimes. You hear it. And do you remember recording it when you guys recorded it? Do you remember that day or thinking, like, this is cool?
I do remember it. I remember you showed us a song at your apartment. We had some Vietnamese food. Mm. And then that was the... That part came right away, and it was like, ah, I'm done. That's what I said. Basically, I'm done. Because I wanted to do that little Chuck Berry thing, but I didn't do the double note, the did it. So I just want to fit that in and go, ah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, is it, what does it matter more or less for a song to have a long life of, like, would you rather a song be super duper memorable because of its tune, because of its melody, or because of the words that it says? Like, you know, Charles, you were saying, it's like, you know, it's just like a couple of chords here and some words that you might, you know, like what is more important to you of the staying power of a song, the melody or the words that what you're trying to say, you know, does it matter?
I mean, both work, right? I mean, you know, because you have people that feel very warm or poignant or whatever about a particular lyric or whatever or the meaning of a song. But then a lot of times it's just sounds and combinations of sounds and chords and,
puts you in a space.
You know, things that give you the chills or the goosebumps and, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think any of our, I mean, half of our audience is like, doesn't speak English. So, they speak rock English, you know what I mean? So I suppose they could connect to it a little bit.
Yeah,
but,
that's a good point.
You know, there's a lot of other stuff mixed in with it, I suppose, when you... So I don't want to put too much... It's nice when words can be good, but... when someone can declare, oh, this is indeed a fine libretto, you know? but at the end of the day, it's a rock music context, so it's like a... There's a lot of... You know what I mean? There's a lot of other kind of elements that are kind of coming to the party also. You know what I mean?
Where's the most surprising place you have found a dedicated fan base? What corner of the world are surprised you? Like, wow.
Like, do you like show up in Lisbon and all of a sudden you're like, wow, we got a lot of fans.
Like, we found that in Iran. We have a big audience.
No joke. Yeah,
yeah. For a podcast. Like, really blew our minds.
We were like, what?
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky enough to have a pretty far-flung audience, but I don't know that, like, I don't know if we've discovered that enclave of, like, you know, whatever, someplace in, somewhere way off of the beaten path, like, I don't know, like, inner India or somewhere like that, you know, where they've somehow discovered our music or whatever. But we do play a lot of places. So I'm trying to think of some place we've played. I mean, talking about like Portugal, like we do really well down in Portugal. So
there you go. What did you guys think about, Charles and Joey, what did you guys think about, what was the way that people used to talk about, they used to try to like, because I hate when people get categorized, but when they try to like call it like the soft, quiet, loud or whatever, what was the term that they used? Do you remember that? They used to try to describe you guys.
Loud, quiet, loud.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you heard that, were you like, oh, okay, well, that's just us, like whatever.
We certainly didn't invent it, you know. I mean, Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture had fucking cannons.
Sean?
That's very true. Yeah.
I mean, go ahead, Sean.
I was just going to say something about touring. So you guys still tour, it sounds like a lot. And when you do you see each other before a show? Or is the first time you see each other when you're on stage? Like, do you hang out backstage before the show?
Yeah.
We hang out about an hour before the show. We convene, and there's an espresso machine in our tour manager's office, and we all go there and get an espresso.
Oh, that's
good. Then we sit down in the dressing room, and then we have, like, some acoustic guitars there. Well, there's one acoustic guitar. And then I think, Dave, you should just find something to tap on. And then we we sing for about a half an hour, 45 minutes, and kind of go, oh yeah, that's how we play. And that's then and then we go on tour. And then, but yeah, we don't really, we don't live in the same city anymore. So I think we have, I don't know, if it's, I don't want to call it that we're lazy, but we've just been doing it for so long that we don't really.
Yeah.
It's okay. We're lazy.
Go over it over and over and over.
We, you know? do you guys, so I mentioned before, I kind of want to jump back. So you do five records in a short amount of time, ending with Tromplemon, which again, another one of those records that years later, everybody's like, oh man, this record is amazing, and we should have recognized it at the time. And you take a long break. You guys were basically broken up for, I don't know, 10 years or something? 12 years. And in that time, you all go off and do different things. Frank, you do. I call you Frank because in that time, you were known as Frank Black. You put a bunch of records out as Frank Black. Of course, Teenager of the Year. I didn't know this. Teenager of the Year, by the way, I just want to say sort of Pixie's side note, if I can, Charles. I didn't know that you had actually been named Teenager of the Year in high school. I read that somewhere. Is that true, that you were named Teenager of the Year?
What's that mean?
It's an award that was given at the high school that I graduated from. I don't know why it's given, but I think it's like a...
it's the greatest
it's like for the good kid. It's like for the good kid that didn't do that much, but like he stayed out of trouble and he seemed nice. And so we got to give him something. And it's like a little, hey, you're the Teenager of the Year. And
I was the class ghost.
You know. Wait, is that true? Is that true, Joe?
The class
no
ghost?
No pictures of me 1 year on the yearbook. I refused to have my picture taken and anything. So I didn't even exist.
Joe, what a perfect pairing. You're the class ghost and the Teenager of the Year together. Like it's almost like meant to be, man. It's like written in the fucking stars. And so then you guys have this 12-year hiatus from Pixies, and you get back.
Is that what it was? Was it just a hiatus to do other stuff, or was there acrimony and you guys were like, no, fuck this, let's not do it?
Oh no, we broke up. The band was broken up, and we had to go pay our dues, I suppose, because we didn't really pay our dues the first time around. I mean, I'm not saying that it was all super easy, but you know, whatever. It was like, Every band's got 5 years, as they say, and you do it all in 5 years, and it all kind of implodes. And then we imploded, and then so we were just whatever, treading water for 12 years. And I mean, not treading water, because I know Kim actually had some pretty big success with her
Breeders,
with her band, the Breeders, and she had a big hit and everything. So. And you know, I mean, I wasn't, you know, I shouldn't, it sounds like a complaining, but I'm not, but you know, it's not like I was, or we were doing all these amazing projects that were, you know, so successful, whatever. You're just kind of hovering around and kind of staying in it as best as you can for a whole, and you know, and plenty of humbling experiences, I suppose, to go along with it.
Well, you inspired in that time. Little do you know, I will tell you one more sidebar, Charles, which is years ago. What is it? 2025. So like 14 years ago, I was trying to come up with. I had this idea for this show that became a very little watched show on Netflix called Flake that I wrote, and I was flying over to the UK. And I was just outlining this like dumb idea, and I was like, "What is this thing? What is this thing?" I was gonna meet my partner Chappie, who's a great friend of Jason's, and
you have the greatest name in the world,
and Mark Chappell, a great writer who wrote, we've written a bunch of stuff together. He wrote "Is This Thing On" with me with Bradley, our new movie. So anyway, so I'm going over there, and I was listening to Teenager of the Year, and I was listening to Freedom Rock. That track, Freedom Rock, and it goes, for you guys who don't know, it goes, my name is Chip, and I'm different. And I just wrote that lyric down in the thing while I was writing the synopsis with no idea. And later, a couple days later, Mark and I were writing, and I looked back at my notes, and I said, this guy's name, and it really helped me kind of get into this guy, into this character that ended up becoming this character, Chip, in my show. And it was based on listening to Freedom Rock. So just so you know, when you thought you were doing nothing, you ended up years later really inspiring me. So thank you.
That's cool.
That's really cool. I'm glad that worked out. You know, I think it's just, you know, if you have any kind of love of language and on the, it doesn't even have to be, academic or whatever. It's just the way that, you know, the way you play around with words, words that you like, sometimes you find a word or a name or something and somehow you incorporate it into your thing.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
And back to the show.
Anyway, so you guys go do that. And then what happens, what is the moment 12 years after you break up? Who calls whom? Who goes? Because you guys all get back, right? Joe and mm-hmm. you, Charles, and Kim, you guys. What's the moment? Who makes the first call? Who has the idea, like, fuck, let's get the band?
Yeah, was it just a text that said, you up?
No, because it was still kind of, believe it or not, I suppose people send texts, but I think that we, even in 2003 or whenever this was, people weren't quite glued to their phones.
It was the a fax.
Of course, the way they are now. I did an interview on a radio show in London, and it was an early morning show, you know, a lot of joking around and kind of, and, you know, they're like a bunch of Brits and they're talking circles around me, you know, and they're kind of being all nuanced and everything. I'm only getting half of what's going on. But anyway, I start kind of trying to joke around with them. They're saying, do you see the other band members? I'm like, yeah, we jam all the time. And I'm just kind of being sarcastic, you know, and kidding around a little bit. And then they knew I was being sarcastic, but they decide to pretend sort of that I wasn't. It's like, oh, we got you. You said it. You said you guys are back together and you're jamming. But I was being obviously, like I said, not serious. But they, after I left the radio station, they kept, that was their little thing that they talked about, I guess, the rest of the show or whatever. Because by the time that I got home to my hotel or whatever, like, I don't remember barely, but there was a world. Remember, there was a where we suddenly CNN was 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And so everyone was kind of aware of like the ticker.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of the idea of a ticker, of a news ticker, you know. And for most, I suppose, Joe Blow people, common people that weren't like following stocks or whatever, it would have been the CNN, would have been the ticker that they would have been aware of. And somehow, our reunion
made it onto the ticker.
Made it onto the ticker. Yeah. And so, like, people started. So, I don't know. Joey might have called me, I think, and said, like, what the fuck is going on? You know, because like, I'm watching CNN here and we're like back together.
Joe, you're reading the ticker and you're like, Joe, you're like, what the fuck, man? Are we getting back together? Like, what's going on?
I was pissed I didn't buy Apple.
Get in line. Get in line, man.
I suppose. I kind of remember a little differently, but yeah.
I love this.
I do remember Charles calling me. I guess I didn't have CNN, you know. I try not to watch. I still try not to watch the news, you know.
That's smart.
I guess it's always been bad. But especially now, I just can't fucking watch it.
Yeah.
But anyway, he called and then that was it.
I think Joey agreed to call Kim. I said, would you call Kim and see if she's up for it? And
well, my friend started saying, you guys are getting back together. And it's like, what? I didn't know. You know, until I got the call from Charles, and then it's like, oh, it is true, you know? Because every 5 years, people would tell me, when are you guys going to get back together? There's always this rumor that we're going to be going to Coachella or something. There's always this thing.
But Joe, you must have known, like, you guys had to have known because you guys were so beloved and so missed that, like, what happened? Like, the touring company or manager, whoever calls and goes, like, hey guys, this is great. Like, we're stoked.
Mm. Yeah, but I'm sure that there's still that other element which is much more sort of delicate and nuanced, which is I don't want to be the one to say, hey, guys, should we do this? Because the other person on the other end of the line might be like, yeah, no, fuck that. What are you talking about? I'm not getting back together with you. Like someone's got to pull their pants down first. I would imagine right. That's a real delicate part of any sort of reunion with any band, yeah, with any group.
Pulling the pants down is certainly a delicate.
Like,
yeah.
You know, is there a belt? Is it zippers? Yeah, is it a button fly? You know, it's complicated. Yeah.
Well, Charles, you were busy, so you know, Kim, Dave, and I got together and to practice the songs.
Wow!
Together, because you were somewhere else, and then we made a deal. No pun intended. If this thing's gonna sound like crap with the three of us, we're gonna shake hands and move on.
Oh, but wow. I didn't know about this deal.
But,
whoa, whoa.
Well, it's true, though, if it wasn't going to work out.
No, I mean, it seems reasonable enough.
Very reasonable. But the first three songs that we went over, we just smiled and go, oh, my God, it still fucking sounds the same. Because my Marshall has Sharpie marks on it, so all I had to do was, like, dial it in and that was that sound. But... more importantly, the quantizing of the groove. I mean, we had it, you know, so.
That had to be such a rush to hear that the first time.
Yeah, when
It was almost comical.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What did you say, the quantizing of the groove? What does that mean?
You know, the way the bass and the rhythm, the way it pushes and pulls.
You mean the actual combination of your sounds individually together to create one singular?
Yeah, just like the nuances of the push and pulls.
Yeah,
we had it. You know,
oh, that's great.
It's just a feel. You had
settings on your amplifier that were specific to that Pixie sound that you had to get back to.
Yeah, yeah, it was Sharpied on there, so I just
that's wild.
That's
cool.
that's
really cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, by the way, so Charles, you go and you get with these guys. You don't realize that until today that they made this deal that they're like, "Hey, if it doesn't work out, we're not going to do it."
No, but you know, I didn't. You know, I suppose I had other concerns or whatever.
Okay, so let me just ask you this, because we got a lot to get in, and I got to let you guys go in a minute. What you know, I outlined again, and not at risk of embarrassing you, which I talk about influence on other musicians and artists throughout the years. Did you ever? Is there a moment for each of you that kind of sticks out, like a cool moment that somebody came and said, somebody that you like or somebody whose music you really respond to, who said, "Hey, man, I really like what you guys do." Is there a moment like that? Because I've had moments like that in my career. I think we all have, where somebody who we respect comes and says, "Like, hey, you done good."
The biggest damn one, Charles. Come on,
who's that?
We were playing at the Orpheum at the time, and then our tour manager says, "Hey, someone wants to come by and after our show." And say hello. And he goes, "Oh, like who the fuck is this?" And he goes, "Oh, it's David Bowie." It's like,
"Oh, wow."
No way.
Yeah, that's cool. David Bowie came by and this is the club and then said, "They like us."
That's cool.
I mean,
that's
he really likes cool. us.
That'll so give that, you some fuel for a few years.
That was it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. There
Charles
you go.
That way, Charles doesn't remember. Charles doesn't remember.
No. Definitely, he looms the largest, I suppose. If you, in those kinds of terms, you know, in terms of like a you know, musical royalty or whatever. Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
Charles, were there other ones for you, like other sort of like bands who you liked who were like more? I mean, Bowie is like an iconic. It doesn't get bigger.
Well, I remember the first TV show we did was in New York with. Do you remember there was a late night program hosted by David Sanborn?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And I forget what the name of it was, but he would have on like four or five different people and they'd all come on and do a song. And they did this jam at the end, which was a little awkward, as I recall. But he had on the Sun Ra Orchestra, mm-hmm. you know. And so they were these, like, you know, old jazz musicians, you know what I mean, who had really kind of been around for a long time and kind of seen it all. And they were, so anyway, we did this ridiculous number called Tame, which is the epitome of the loud, quiet, loud dynamic, and it had the and the quiet part, and then in the loud part, right? Anyway, it does get quite loud, and you know, I guess I have a loud voice or whatever, and it's very minimalist in terms of its orchestration and our musical idea. It's very minimalist, but it does do get loud and it does get quiet. Anyway, but one of the gentlemen from the Sun Ra Orchestra, you know, I don't know if he was complimenting me, but he just said, he said, you sure can holler like that after the show. And I was just like, yeah. It's like, all right, one of those guys thought I was cool, yeah, you know. He was basically saying, you know, good holler, you know, like good utilization of your loud chops or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And he didn't quite get it necessarily musically, but he got what we were trying to do. And so I like that validation a lot, you know, from a cat, so to speak, from a jazz cat. Felt really great, you know.
Yeah, yeah. From somebody who doesn't play the kind of music or that you guys do to sort of acknowledge right. in that way, it's got to be.
Someone who's truly paid their dues, shall we say, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, to get validation from them or whatever, I felt like, okay, all right, so maybe we're on to like something. It's real or something. It's got some sort of, you know, mojo or whatever. We have some sort of magical thing going on. We are special, you know. We have something.
Yeah, so, we're good. Wait, so now you paid your dues. You got to admit now you paid your fucking dues. You guys are 40 years in. Basically, you're doing a 40-year reunion. Not reunion. I shouldn't say that. You guys at all. You guys are doing a 40th kind of almost like an anniversary tour, if you will, this year with your... Is it your 9th studio album? Is that right? 9th or 10th?
Something like that.
Right? The night the zombies came?
I'm not sure about this 40th anniversary angle. I feel like...
That's me. That's me saying that.
I was telling Joe that if it was like 50th, maybe we'd be like, all right, we got to own it. We're like really old and we've been doing it for 50 years and whatever. But 40 feels a little bit like, shh. Like, okay, do we really need to like talk about like how long it's been going on?
No.
Just like talk about me, you know. So I don't mind you bringing it up. I'm realizing because we don't necessarily choose the hook, you know, that maybe a publicist or somebody is employing to promote your next little run of shows. And recently I learned it was like 40th anniversary. And I'm like, fuck it, man, 40th.
Yeah. Well,
important?
This is a good note for your publicist right now, your publicity team. We'll let them know to drop that from all materials going forward. But you guys are going to
tour. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I get it. It's a good hook. I mean, you know, but whatever. I guess I'm a little, you know, what's the word? I guess I'm vain is what it is. Mm. Is that what it is?
Yeah, we are too, man. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to imagine that Jason's vain by looking at him, but he is very vain. And so do you guys, when you go out on this tour this year, you just finished, it sounds like a couple weeks ago, a show, but when you go out on tour, how much, because you guys are so prolific, like as I mentioned, your 9th or 10th studio album, how much do you mix up new stuff with, I mean, you've got to have people going like, please play, here comes your man, which is just like, you know, or whatever, like you must have, do you play some of the songs from across your catalog?
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. We usually rehearse up like 50 songs and then we just call them out, you know, when we play a show. And then, you know, we kind of know which are the top 10 and we know which are the ones that we like to play that sound good, I think. I mean, I don't know if everyone gets to scratch their itch with the set list that's chosen, but... you know, there's a lot of songs that, you know, kind of like they fall flat or whatever, you know. You think, oh, that one they're really going to go crazy for. But then when you do it every time, it's like, it's okay, you know. So I think it always kind of gravitates towards, We just learn a batch. Brains can handle about 50 numbers.
But that's a lot.
Like, all right, let's just fucking go on tour.
By the way, Charles, that's a lot. 50 is a lot. Joe, do you have a song that you have always loved to play? Like when you just start to play it, do you have one? I mean, I'm sure it's hard to narrow it down, but do you have one that you kind of get into that, into a thing with it, and you just love it?
It depends on the night. I do like to play Tame because I feel like a wise ass on it, you know. I think the song has three chords the whole time, Charles. And
yeah.
I do one.
So you divvy him up.
Charles, it must feel good though after all. I mentioned Here Comes Your Man. I mean, that was a song that you wrote. That was an early song of yours, and it's still got this. Talk about a song again that's just got this kind of staying power, that still feels just as relevant today as the moment you dreamed it up. Does that must be kind of gratifying?
I have grown to like the song eventually. I think that when we played it in our early repertoire, it was one of the ones that were kind of maybe a bit poppy, that we didn't know if it was too poppy or too kind of nice sounding. But the producer, Gil, that we did four records with, he really liked that one. So it got resurrected from the early repertoire, finally to the record that it showed up on, which was Doolittle, our third record. And I believe that the record company that was distributing our record in the USA was, what were they called, Joe? Elektra Records. And they had like all kinds of connections to showbiz. And I remember that was the only time we did some sort of real artsy-fartsy, screw you all, we don't care move, was they wanted us to play that song on what show, Joe, was it?
Arsenio Hall.
Yeah. And that felt like too weird to us to like, oh, that's silly. Like that's our silly song, or that's our song that's too sweet. And maybe it's all, we don't understand. Like it's all going too fast. Like they want us to play in our city hall and we have to do that song. There's no other song we can do. And that's the thing that's going to represent us. And we just, I think now we'd be like, oh, awesome. TV. Yeah. You know, but at the time I think there was a little bit of a concern of being, there was a little bit of a too, I didn't have a big, we didn't have a big too cool for school attitude, but you know, a little bit once in a while, you know, you gotta we don't do that, you know?
We've all been there.
So we had that, I feel badly because it wasn't anything against any particular program or whatever. It's just the idea that feels too mainstream and it seems
too late. Arsenio's mad at you, too late. Hey, listen, man, I want to say, what I love about that particular song, I will say that it feels like it could have been written any year from sort of 1950 on. There's something about it to me that just kind of cuts across everything. There's something, I don't know, timeless. So I love that song in particular. That's just me.
We play it every show. I enjoy playing it now and I've tried to gradually appreciate whatever it is that people are responding to in it. And it's a nice little doo-doo. It's bouncy. Everyone seems to be in a pretty good mood when we play it. And I don't know, my mood seems to pick up a little bit when we play it.
There you go. That's the most important thing.
So that's a good sign.
That's good, Charles. Listen, guys, we've dominated your time. It's such a thrill, both Charles and Joe, to have you guys here today.
Very nice of you guys to join us.
I mean, you guys, your ninth or tenth studio album, The Night the Zombies Came, is it just an absolute testament to your staying power. You guys are on tour this year. Charles, I won't say your 40th reunion tour or anniversary tour at all. I've taken that out. Okay, we're just calling it a victory tour. Your 26th victory tour.
But yeah, by the way, Charles, I think next year, if you don't mind being paid by rubies instead of currency.
Yeah, there you go.
40th anniversary is the ruby.
It's the ruby.
Is that bartering? Like what?
No money, just gems. Wedding anniversary is
like diamond, ruby. So it's ruby. Okay.
Oh, it's like stones.
Stones.
So next year we're going to be
I'm into that.
By
we got a guy in Antwerp who's going to be muling some rubies to you, Charles. So it's all good, man. What a thrill. You guys, unbelievable. Continued success. You brought so much joy and so much just amazing music to people over the years. And I'm such a fan. And I just thank you for your time, honestly. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for thanks, all the fellas. Kind words. And thank you for having us on. We appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks for being
you
here,
guys.
You guys
are awesome. All right, Pixies,
take care.
Everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Right. Thanks, bye, gentlemen.
Adios.
Thank you.
Adios.
Bye.
Bye.
Guys.
That was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's what a thrill for me to have, yeah. To have
I love
Pixies
that.
On.
Yeah. I remember in college, you know, I think they started in mid 80s. And in college,
you were on the, you were here for when we were talking to them, right?
But I mean, specifically, it was like 85 or 86 or something,
something
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I went to college in 88. And, They were big on campus. I mean, I heard some of their songs, and I know a couple of their songs, but I didn't know, you know, anything about them till today. So it's really cool.
I think I wore a T-shirt of theirs. In something.
A lot of people had their T-shirts for some reason. Yeah, I remember right? seeing
and
T-shirts.
And I think on the back it said "Adios," or was that a Sonic Youth shirt? And when he just said adios cool, at the end.
Cool. I was like, you know, you'd see somebody wearing like a Pixies t-shirt. You'd be like, all right, this person knows what's up.
Yeah, this person's right. cool.
Unless it was JB, of course.
Yeah. Right, right, you know, right, just right, playing right. a character that's cool. Just,
yeah.
Right, right, right. All right.
I would love you to play a cool character once. That would be
didn't
fun.
You wear a, didn't you I wear a Pixies so t-shirt in Black Rabbit?
Did yeah, that's, yes, that's, yeah, that's yeah. what I'm talking about. Yeah. And I took it. I took it. I was like, hey, can I have this when we finished? Because I want to be cool at home. I want to be cool dad.
You have a Pixies shirt at home?
Oh, yeah. A couple of them.
Let me come over and bring you some soup.
Would you please?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm
not,
sick,
it's not
man.
To steal your Pixies shirt, okay? It's not yeah, to.
Come on up. We can just try on a bunch of stuff, you know?
Just no, we're not doing like a try on.
And put some stuff on you and just dress you up a little bit.
What are you talking
about? Take some photos, do a workout.
Smear some lipstick on me?
I'd love to put you in a bunch of my clothes. Wouldn't that be fun? If I, you just come over and I just put you in a bunch of my clothes?
Fun in what?
Oh, my God. That sounds so creepy. Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, no. Hey, I'm gonna see you in this. Oh, yeah. That reminds me of Sandra Bernhardt in King of Comedy. She starts knitting him a sweater while she's got him all tied up. I'd love to see you in this. You think the sleeves are too short? Anyway.
I haven't seen that in a long time.
So
do you remember that?
Oh, here we go.
No, do you remember that song?
He's got, oh, he's got his hands on one. I can see. It's, yeah. It's well, the twinkle in his eye.
Yeah, okay. Well, they mentioned Modern Love by David Bowie, and I was thinking about those lyrics of Modern Love.
Better wave.
Yeah, I'm standing in the wind, but I never wave.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Michael Grant Terry, Rob Armjarv, and Bennett Barbico.
Smart. Less.